Okay, good evening. We have kind of a rare opportunity to talk about Hakel. Hakel was a theme in the Parsha last week, in Parsha's Vayelech, but its relevance now is much more specific, not just coming from a recent Parsha, but coming from the fact that the focus of the mitzvah is Sukkot time, is the second day of Sukkot, but much more specifically than that, for our purposes and for our place in time right now, is that it's not every Sukkot, but it is the Sukkot following the Shemitah year. So this is the year for this opportunity, and to be able to talk about that, and to be able to address that in this year has a special focus to it. And to get a little bit of a perspective about what the mitzvah is about, so first just to lay down the very basic details, and then we'll try to expand a little bit more. So the Torah tells us in Parshas Vayelech that Mikeh Shavashanim, that at the end of the Shemitah year, we should have this ceremony. The Gemara clarifies in Masechta Sota what it means, that it means at the end of the first day of Yontif, after the first day of Yontif, after the first day of Sukkot, Matzah Yontif HaRishon, we should have this public ceremony. And we'll talk about the details of the public ceremony, but it's just off the bat interesting to focus on the timing for a second. Why specifically on Sukkot? Why specifically at this time? The Aznaim Latorah, the Litzkarav, Reb Salman Sarotskin in his Sefer, he notes that Sukkot is the Chag HaAsif, it's the time of the harvest. And here we're at the end of Shemitah, so there's nothing to harvest. So it's a good time to take off and to focus on this. And also, this is the time of Bracha that comes with the whole Shemitah experience. So therefore, for these reasons, it's a good appropriate time to have this ceremony. So this ceremony involves a public Kriyas HaTorah that is performed ideally by the king. And I say ideally because it's also the case that it's not even clear from the Torah at all that it's the king. It's clear from the Mishnah and Sota and Daf Mem Aleph, which details the whole process of how the Torah is given to the king, who then sits and reads it, but the psukim don't indicate that it's got to be the king. So that prompts a discussion where exactly the din comes from. Some understand that this is a tradition, it's kind of a Kabbalah from the Nevi'im, that's the way the Sefer Yireim and the Smag understands. Some understand that it's a din d'rabbanan, it's not really part of the din of the Torah at all. And others do see it as being conveyed in the psukim. So how is it being conveyed in the psukim? So some suggest, the Kiryas Sefer of the Mabit and the Chizkuni, that the Lashon Yochid indicates that it's coming from some specific individual who presumably is the king, so we can consider that implied in the Psukim. And Rashi understands that this is the whole point in the Mishnah Torah of the king. The second Torah that the king has is so that it should be used to read for this purpose. So that certainly indicates that there is a role here for the king. However, at the same time, the Achronim posed the question, the Menches Chinuch and others raised the question, so what if you don't have a king? Or what if you have a king who's not capable of reading? So does it have to be specifically the king, or could it be someone else? So he assumes, Rav Asher Weiss has a discussion about this in his Sefer Al HaTorah as well, and they assume that Al Pi Svara, it's not Ma'akev. It doesn't seem like it has to be the king specifically. And it could be there are other indications as well. I should mention there's a beautiful new sefer that came out on the topic of Hakel. I have it here with me, called Parshas HaMelech. It's written by a Talmid Chacham by the name of Rabbi Moshe Parnas of Borough Park, who was kind enough to send me the sefer and to share some thoughts with me. So one of the points that he has in the sefer is that, especially within Rashi's explanation, that it's a function of the Mishnah Torah of the king, so then that also would lend to the interpretation that it's not specifically got to be the king, because it's not Ma'akev that it's the king, that the king has a mitzvah that he should use his Mishnah Torah to lane at this Hakel. But if there's no king, so then we can have the Hakel without him. It's not necessarily contingent on there being a presence of the king. So In any event, this is part of the background, and the Mishnah also talks about a bima that was built in order for the king to sit there and to lay. So these are some of the basic background, a little bit more, as we'll discuss in a few moments. But it's a good time to pose the question, which is going to impact a lot of other issues. And Rabbi Parnas has a beautiful hakdama about this in his sefer, where he goes through a lot of the possibilities as to the question of what's the purpose of this ceremony. And presumably, if we have an understanding of what we're trying to accomplish, that probably could help us to understand what's behind some of the dinim and what's behind some of the concepts. So there are a couple of possibilities, and to broadly break them down, it could be that it's about the content here, that we're trying to teach the specific content of the Torah. That's how the Ramban understands that it is for the purpose of learning. This is for the purpose of Talmud Torah, that people should hear and understand and learn about the Torah. And it could be either in addition to that or separate from that, that really it's more experiential. The Sefer HaChinuch has a beautiful description of how he sees this. This is the second to last mitzvah in the Torah. So mitzvah 612 in the Sefer HaChinuch, he has a whole description about how this is to convey the message that the Torah is the center of everything, and that this is the unique bond of the Jewish people is through the Torah, and now everyone's going to talk about the Torah because there's this big gathering where the Torah is the middle and everyone is brought around to it. So that is a part of it. And others understand there's a specific connection to tshuva and to Yerushalayim. The Kli Yakar writes that this is a hachana for tshuva, and that the tshuva of the rabbim is separate from the Sarasimei tshuva. Sarasimei tshuva, so there's a special opening for tshuvas ayachid as well, but tshuvas harabim is accepted all the time, and so this is to prepare the people to perform a communal tshuva and to recognize the messages of the Torah. That's certainly also indicated in the psukim. The psukim mentions specifically Yerushalayim, l'man yilmadu v'yiro, and that idea is certainly a theme here that's emphasized in some of the understandings, that it's there to help impart Yerushalayim on the people. The Znayim LaTorah comments that the relationship here between learning and Yira, so we know we find in many places that they're habaha, that we can't have one without the other. So we can't have Yira without Talmud Torah, it's Ein Bor Yirei Chet, and Lama Ma'ariz Chassid, that you have to be knowledgeable about the Torah in order to have realized Yerushalayim. And on the other hand, also, in the other direction, it's also true, Reishas Chacham Yerush Hashem, you can't have learning without Yira. And the Gemara calls the Yira the Otzer, Yerushalayim the Otzer for the Chachma of the Torah. So they're Habaha, so here the Psukim link them. This is in order both to convey content and also to convey Yerushalayim. So that's a big part of the message as well. There's also clearly a basis to assume that there's some connection here to the mitzvah of Re'iyah on Haregel, and the timing here on Sukkos is certainly significant, and many point to that as well. And there are a number of places in the Gemara where the Gemara connects Re'iyah and Hakel and assumes that there are derivations that can go from one to the other, so it seems like there's an aspect to that as well. But also very noteworthy is a phrasing that's specifically in the Rambam. The Rambam in the third parak of Hilchos Chagiga brings the halachos of Hakel, and he has a statement there which impacted the thinking of many who wrote about this, and we'll come back to this a few times, that a part of what's happening here is there is an evocation of Maimed Har Sinai, that this is essentially a reenactment on some level of the original giving of the Torah, and that's a major part of the experience, and that's a major part of what's going on. In fact, Lubavitcher Rebbe in his Sichos, so he highlighted this Rambam very much, and he noted that this also explains certain statements within the Rambam's formulation, that the Rambam talks about the need to pay very close attention, and that you have to have kavana in doing this, and he uses the lashon of chayiv, chayavin, and he keeps talking about it in an absolute sense. So where does he get that from? And it seems to be a little bit unusual the way he portrays the obligation of kavana and the like. So the Rebbe wrote that this is all an outgrowth of his idea that this is a Maimed Har Sinai, and therefore if we're really trying to evoke Maimed Har Sinai, so there are certain details that come the mela that are automatically understood that's what's going on, and that's how the Rambam understands it. The Sfas Emes, in his Sichus on Vayelech, this Ger Rebbe, the Sfas Emes said that he thinks that that's also the timing, as we noted before. Why should it be specifically after Shemitah? It's interesting, that whole discussion that it should be specifically after Shemitah. There's a sefer that came out originally anonymously. It was actually written by the Adaris, the first father-in-law of Rav Kook. And the Adaris, he also wrote a Haskama when he wasn't known that he was the one who wrote the sefer. So he understood that it needs two elements, that it has to be the end of the Shemitah year and the beginning of a new Shemitah cycle. What's the nafka mina? Meaning that when they were counting Yovel, so the Yovel year, they wouldn't have it. It wouldn't have both of those elements. That was a chiddush, which many talked about. But certainly the idea specifically that it's at the end of Shemitah, so the Ger Rebbe suggested that if you understand that it's there to convey Maimed Har Sinai and the instruction of the mitzvos, so here we have the Gibori Koach. They've all shown that they're ready to be Moser Nefesh and to serve God with faith, having come out of the Shemitah experience. So therefore, it's an appropriate time now to convey all of the mitzvos, or the message of the mitzvos, the acceptance of the Torah as a whole. And perhaps that's also a part of the timing and a part of why it's set up the way it is. It's interesting to note, also perhaps it relates to some of these points that we've said already, that there's a little bit of a question as to how many mitzvos are involved in Hakel. So we just said that the Sefer HaChinuch counts it as a second to last, 612. So most count it as one mitzvah. It's the way the Rambam, it's the way others count it, that it's one mitzvah, but there are some who count it as two mitzvahs, and there are slightly different variations in how exactly you can count it as two mitzvahs. The Sefer Reim, for example, is one of those who counts it as two mitzvahs. He counts it as one mitzvah to gather and one mitzvah to read. And so therefore, that also helps the idea that maybe the king is not ma'akev, because he has his mitzvah to read, but if he's not there, there's still a mitzvah on the people to gather and to read. Now, it's an interesting question. You say a mitzvah on the people, what does that mean? A mitzvah on the tzibur to make sure that all the people come, a mitzvah on the bezdin, a mitzvah on the individuals. It's interesting, Rav Asher Weiss highlights this in his discussion in his sefer, that the Gemara in Kiddushin on Daf Lamed Daled does identify Hakel as a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. Now, it's an exception to the general rule, because women are obligated in any way. The Torah specifically says that women are obligated. But at least as far as its structure, otherwise it would have been a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. So that seems to suggest that it's kind of a personal chiyuv. You don't have that concept unless you're addressing individuals. So the idea that the Gemara could see it that way makes it sound like there's a mitzvah on the people to come and to gather, and perhaps that's how you could understand it. So there are these different views, whether it's one mitzvah, whether it's a group of mitzvahs here, so that's also interesting to keep in mind, and that also could impact a little bit how to understand what's going on, or is there more than one thing going on. It also could be a factor here as well. So among the important details is what exactly is it that is being read. He's not reading the entire Torah. He's reading HaTorah HaZos. That's the language of the Pasuk here. So what does HaTorah HaZos mean? So it's a little bit of a machlokas. There are slight differences. But what it basically is selections from Sefer Dvarim. And that's for sure the case. Everything is from Sefer Dvarim, and that's interesting in general. The focus on Sefer Dvarim, we're learning in the Yeshiva Maseches Gittin, and there's an interesting Tosfos at the very beginning of the Masechta that talks about the difference between Sefer Dvarim and the rest of the Torah. So there's a lot to say about Sefer Dvarim as a whole. We're now towards the end of that Sefer, but what exactly is the character of Sefer Dvarim? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, in his Sefer Al HaTorah, in the Emes Liakov and Vayelech, has a long discussion about why Dvarim is the winner of this contest, what should be read for Hakel. And he discusses their perspective that essentially Sefer Dvarim is a restatement of the main principles of the Torah, specifically before entering into Eretz Yisrael. So it seems like if you want to know how to charge the tzibur that's living in Eretz Yisrael with the main themes of the Torah, so Sefer Dvarim is the place. So we can understand why the king reading at Hakel would be reading from Sefer Dvar. But that being said, so it's not all of Sefer Dvarim. So if you look at the Mishnah and Sota and Rashi there and the Rambam, so there's slight differences in exactly what it is, but that involves reading from the beginning until the end of Shema, and then skipping to Vahaya, and then skipping to Aser Taser, and then maybe skipping to the Brachos HaKlolos, maybe going straight. That's where there's a difference. But we do see that there is a focus on the part of Staka that we read at the end of Yontif, that we read on Shmini Atzeres, on the section of Aser Taser. So that's included here. And Rashi writes that the reason that's included is because it's the Zman HaAsif. So it's important to know about Maisris. That's an important mitzvah to know at the harvest time. So the Aznayim Torah comments on this Rashi, but says Shemitah year, so there's no Maisris. So he quotes from the Torah Al HaTorah. The point is that now they got to get back into the habit. So during the Shemitah year, they didn't have Maisris, but now as we're leaving the Shemitah year, so now there has to be a reminder that that's important. So he has an interesting comment there. There's Naim Latari says, if we have to remind people about things that they may have forgotten about over the course of that year, so that maybe we should also remind them about the Din of Gazel, because throughout the year, the fields were Hefker. So anyone could go and take from the fields, but now they're not Hefker anymore. So maybe we should remind people that they can't go in and take from the fields. So the truth is, according to the Rambam, if you read straight to the Klalos, so you have in the middle all the Dinim of Gezel and the like, but according to Rashi, you don't necessarily have all that. So how come we don't have the same point? We should remind people that things have changed and that you can't take from the fields anymore. There's a halacha of Gezel. So he suggests that it's still different, that when it comes to taking from people's fields, so the owners are going to be makbid. So if people are going to start coming into their fields and trying to take stuff, so the owners are going to stop them. There'll be something there to remind people that they shouldn't be doing this. But as far as the Maisra, so the Aniyim are Ein Lo Tovim, they're not going to be able to speak up and ask for the Maisras themselves. So therefore, there's a need specifically to have a reminder of that. It's a very fascinating idea. It's perhaps an even more fascinating idea. Rav Yonason Eibschitz, in his Tiferes Yonason, he writes that the idea of having Hakel right at the end of Shemitah, it's a way, like we sometimes talk about when you have a public Havdalah, like an NCSY Shabbaton, so you want to emphasize, okay, so we've had Shabbos on such a high level of Kedusha, but we don't want to let it disappear when we go out to the Reek, and we want to hold on to that spirituality. So too, there's a similar theme here, that at the end of the Shemitah year, so we want to take that Kedusha, and we want to hold on to it, so we have a reminder, we have this big, it's essentially a big public Havdalah ceremony or the like, we're trying to make sure that these values will continue into the next year. But there's a very fascinating perspective in the Sefer Paris Yosef HaCharash, so he quotes from the Sefer Tal Torah, that kind of puts somewhat of an opposite spin on it. There's a whole discussion in general about how we perceive things like communism and socialism, and there's a lot of literature about this, and the way the Rabbanim reacted to ideas of communism, which one might think is, sounds nice from a religious perspective, it sounds like everybody's being taken care of, and isn't that what we want? So that all sounds great, and yet religious leaders have often been very opposed to communism. Certainly the Rabbanim were opposed to communism. And a part of what they were opposed to is that even Im Timsi Lomar, that everyone really was being taken care of. So that's itself a huge if. But let's assume for a second that it was successful in taking care of everyone. So still, there would be a big problem spiritually, because there wouldn't be a role for the individual in chesed. People wouldn't be able to directly help others through their own private property and giving stalker from that. So that's a big loss. So that's a problem. So in general, that's an issue. So when it comes to Shemitah, so we have a year which essentially is a socialist in nature. What's going on seems to basically be of a communist kind of nature. So he suggests that at the end of the Shemitah year, we have to reemphasize to the people that stock is a thing. That now it's something similar a little bit to what the Naam Torah was saying in Rashi, but this is a broader idea, that the whole notion of being able to give to others. The Emor Emes quotes there also, saying that essentially we don't really have chesed during the Shemitah year, because everything is just open. Everyone can take what they need. So we don't have a role for chesed, so we have to remind people that chesed is a thing, that chesed is something that we need to actively do, and perhaps that's a part of the message, a very fascinating idea. Another detail is that the Kriya has to be B'lashon HaKodesh, which is also interesting as far as what's going on. That's clear from the Mishnah, but it's not clear why it is. So the Rambam in Hilchos Chagiga, he seems to have drasha. It's a Torah Hazos. Hazos is Bilshona, the way it's written. Torah Tamima writes over there that he doesn't know where he gets this drasha from. You don't find that there stated in the Mishnah, even though the Mishnah gives us sources when it talks about other parts of the Torah that have to be read specifically B'lashon HaKodesh, like Vikra Bikurim and Parsha Chalitza. So there are sources that are given. So here you don't have anything spelled out. So maybe the Rambam found it somewhere else, and maybe he came onto it on his own. So he's not sure where the Rambam gets this from. So my grandfather, in his commentary to the Torah Tamim and the Shuvas Nefesh, he points out he doesn't think it's so strange, doesn't think it's so hard to understand, that the Mishnayos are telling you that other things that are included in Mishnah Torah have a din of having to be read B'lashon HaKodesh, so therefore you understand that this whole Mishnah Torah needs this as well, needs to be read B'lashon HaKodesh, and therefore perhaps it's self-understood that that's what's going on. Okay, but once we have all that, so we know roughly what's being read and how it's being read, and ideally who's reading it, so who's he reading it to? So here the Torah specifically tells us that this is not just a mitzvah on the adult males, but it's a mitzvah also on the nashim and on the taf. So there's a big difference between the two, but there's differences within them as well. So when it comes to nashim, so the Gemara makes a distinction, the Gemara Maseches Chagiga, and it says that the men are coming l'mod and the nashim are coming l'shmoa. So what exactly that means is interesting. Rav Soloveitchik is brought down in the Rishima Shiurim to Bava Kamma and Daf Yud Zayin, the quote from Rav Soloveitchik's Shiurim about this, that essentially what it sounds like is that men have a chiyuv in Talmud Torah inherently, and women have an obligation to learn about the mitzvot that are relevant to them. So that distinction between Lishmoa and Lomod perhaps is working off that premise. So this is very evocative of what the Beis HaLevi said, namesake of Rav Soloveitchik, his great-grandfather, the Beis HaLevi. He has this yesod in at least three places in his writings. It's in the Hakdama to his Chuvas, and it's in the Chuvas and Siman Vav, and it's also the Sefer HaTorah, where he makes this distinction that men and women are both obligated in learning Torah, but it's a different type of limud, it's a different type of chiyuv, that men are obligated for learning in and of itself, and women are obligated to learn to that which connects to what they're obligated to do. So perhaps that's what this language is suggesting. It happens to be Tosfos in Maseches Sota earlier on Daf Chaf, where they have the whole discussion there about women in Talmud Torah. So Tosfos there quotes this idea, and he understands that it means that they should come to learn the halachas that they need to know about. So that's a whole side topic, what exactly the implications are. But what gets even more attention here is the fact that the Torah says to bring the taf. The Torah says to bring the children. So that, there's a lot to figure out about. First of all, what do we mean by taf? And what's the purpose of bringing the taf? So sometimes we find, like in the connection to Parshas Korach, that taf means very, very young children. Can mean infants. And in fact, that's what the Merchas Chinuch writes over here in 6:12 in the Tav Reish Yud Beis, that it means really even babies, as long as they're established and not a nafil. So if they're even a month old, or maybe even less than that, so then you have to bring them with to Hakel. And the Adaris, in the Sefer we mentioned before, so he has is very shocked by that. He says, how could that possibly make sense? You're going to bring little babies who have no idea what's going on, and they're going to be screaming, and who's going to have their diapers, and who's going to be taking care of them? You know, bring that all into the Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't make sense. It can't be. He just doesn't understand how that's a possibility. There is a long discussion about this. We'll make reference to a little bit later in the Tshuvas Binyan Av of Rav Bakshi Daron, Zichrono Livracha, was a former chief rabbi. He passed away during COVID. And he has two tshuvas about this, in Chelek Beis of his tshuvas, Simen Lamed Aleph and Simen Lamed Hei.
And he responds to the Adaris's point. He says, if it's a Gzeres HaKasev, then it's true anyway. So the questions don't necessarily refute the point. But still, you have to figure out really logically what it means. And he thinks that at a minimum, it doesn't really mean, like the Mechas Chinuch says, as long as they're established not to be an Eif, it doesn't mean really 1 month or 2 month old, but it means I have to at least have the ability to relate to the concept of hearing. That there's got to be at least some kind of minimal maturity for that point. We'll come back to a little bit more about what that could mean. But the Ramban has a comment over here where the Ramban says that it can't mean little children who have no idea what's going on. He says that doesn't make any sense. So it has to be that they're at least close to the age of chinuch. Otherwise, he thinks, what's the point? There's no point in bringing children who have no connection, no adjacency even to the mitzvah of chinuch, so it's got to be at least somewhat older children. And the Nefesh HaRav, Rav Shechter quotes from Reb Chaim Brisker, that Reb Chaim Brisker thought it was pashut like that. But, as he points out, as the Ramban himself points out, and as the Maharsha asks on the Gemara, that it seems like the Gemara contradicts this, because there is a very often quoted line in the Gemara that seems to challenge the idea that it is older children specifically, because the Gemara raises the question, that same Gemara that tells us there's a difference between Hanashim and Nashim, that men come L'mod and Nashim come L'shmo, okay, so we understand why they're there, but Hataf, why the Taf there? So the Gemara has this line, Litein Schar L'mivyehem, that they're there in order to give Schar to those who bring them, to the parents who bring them. So it sounds as if, it doesn't, not conclusive is what it means, but it sounds as if that there's no other purpose, that they're not actually accomplishing anything for their own learning, but that it's a schar for the parents who are bringing it, so are bringing them. So that's hard to understand. The Kli Yakar asks what you're saying, that they're just trying to make things harder for themselves in order to get more schar, so why don't we tell them just to carry wood or something, or walk backwards, or come in with their eyes closed? You know, we're just trying to create more schar. So a number of svarim have the suggestion that the little kids are going to have to come mamela, because if all the men are coming and all the women are coming, so who's going to take care of the children? So it's going to have to be, they're going to have to bring the children with. So since they're bringing the children with anyway, so then we say, okay, Ratzah Kadosh Baruch Hu L'Zakos is B'nai Yisrael, we want to give more schar, so we make it a din, we make it a mitzvah in order to retain schar l'mivyehem. So that's also a little bit of a difficult concept. Presumably, what that suggestion would mean is that it becomes a necessary step in order to do it. So therefore, that's understood as a part of the preparation, a part of the effort that goes into the mitzvah. So there's a schar that comes with that. But even so, many assume that there's more involved than that. And many point to a statement in the end of the first parak of the Yerushalmi Yevamos, parak Aleph Yevamos in the Yerushalmi and Halacha Vav. So it says there that Rabbi Yehoshua's mother used to bring him to shul when he was in the carriage, when he was a tiny baby, so that the Torah would stick in his ears. And indeed, the Mishnah says about him, Ashri Oladito, that his mother is fortunate for what she did in implanting in those very, very early days the love for Torah. And it's also significant, as the Meshech Chachma point out, and maybe you'd notice, that the Gemara in Chagiga, which tells us, the Bavli in Chagiga, which tells us this idea that children are brought, Litein Schar L'mivyehem, so there's a whole story around how this is told, that Rabbi Yeshua is the one who was asking, so what were the chidushim that came up in the Beis HaMedrash, and he had to push for it, and eventually he was told this explanation, that why are the taf brought to Hakel, Litein Schar L'mivyehem, and Rabbi Yeshua has this emotional reaction. He says, wow, that's amazing, you had this beautiful margolius, you had this beautiful jewel, and you almost hid it from me, you wanted to conceal it from me, I had to push you to tell me the Dvar Torah. So the Or Sameach in the Sefer Meshech Chachma, Meshech Chachma points out that you see why he had this emotional reaction, because we know from the Yerushalmi that this is his origin story. This is how he got his love for Torah, that his mother brought him when he was a little baby and exposed him to what was going on, and that was had such a hashpa on him. So he was very appreciative of this idea that that's what the Torah is saying when it says to bring the taft out of the hakel, l'tein schar l'yehem. So he understands that that's what's going on, and he was able to really appreciate that, and that's a part of the message. Rav Huttner has a letter in the Igros Pachir Yitzchak where he talks a lot about the idea that the Rambam had mentioned, we noted before, that there's a notion of Maimer HaSinai that's involved in the Hakel process. So there, the bris is on everyone. And if that's the case, so then we need everybody there. So we need the children as well to be a part of the bris, just like was the case with Matan Torah. In the Sefer Paris Yosef HaChodesh, he has a nice idea. He quotes from his uncle that perhaps the idea, Litain Scharlum Viehem, this idea, the similar concept sometimes are mentioned at a bris, very similar dynamic, that when a young child is brought to Shul by his parents, so he doesn't have any say in the matter, he has no free will. This is something that his parents are choosing to do whether he likes it or not. So he doesn't really get any schar for that, doesn't get any schus for that, because this isn't something that was his decision. However, when he grows up and he has children, and then he brings his own children with to shul, so that shows that he's happy about what happened to him when he was a kid. It shows that he is grateful for having been brought himself as a child, so now he's owning the experience. So retroactively, he gets the schar for having come himself as a child to the shul. So the idea of litein schar l'mviehem, that those who are bringing them are now getting the schar for what they themselves did at that age, which wasn't a active choice then, but now they're showing that it's something that they're happy about. The Chasam Sofer in his drashas, so he suggests, and this is probably a very intuitive understanding here as well, is that when you say litein schar l'mviehem, so it doesn't mean that there's no value at all for the children. That's just a point of emphasis here as well, that there's a schar mitzvah involved, but that there's still a value for the children. So presumably what we mean is not necessarily that they have to actually understand what's going on, they have to be able to perceive the content. We don't necessarily mean they have to be that old, but that they're going to have some awareness of what's going on, that this is going to begin the process of chinuch. They're going to have an appreciation for the holiness and the awe of what's involved, and then they're going to get into learning, and it's all going to draw on that. So this is the beginning of the process of chinuch, and therefore litein schar l'mviehem, it means that down the line these ones who bring them are going to do a better job of chinuch because of this. So that's going to bring them schar, that's going to be a source of merit for them, that they made sure to set the foundation for the chinuch of their children with this. There's a similar comment in the Orach Chaim where he comments on the fact that the Torah highlights Yilmedu and Yiro, that they could also be two separate things, that it could be that there's learning and there's Yiras Shemaim, or it could also be that even if you're not on the level to be learning anything at all, but there's still the Yiras Shemaim that comes from it, and that's a very powerful point that's worth it, even for relatively young children. Again, would it mean literally the youngest children the way the Menachas Chinuch says? That's probably still a little bit much, but maybe still significantly before they're able to understand some things. So this could connect in general to some of the broader questions of the mitzvah of Chinuch. We have a mitzvah of Chinuch which in general is a derabanan, that we have a concept of minors doing mitzvos, even though they're not chayiv, it's a din derabanan. It was a machlokas rishonim what that means. Does that mean that the children are chayiv to do the mitzvos on a level midrabanan? Or it could be that there's no such idea, because to be chayiv in mitzvos derabanan, you have to be chayiv in mitzvos daraisa, because you have to be subject to the authority of the rabbis. You have to be subject to los aser. But if you're not chayiv in mitzvos at all, it's hard to see where you can even be obligated in mitzvos derabanan. So some of the rishonim, you see that understanding, that they mean that the mitzvah of chinuch is on the parents, that the parents are obligated to make the child do mitzvos, and that presumably there's a value to that. So it has ramifications on a number of levels, including whether there is an idea here that the child's actually doing the mitzvah, or is it something that's more of a broader educational goal. So that's an interesting discussion of itself that could somewhat parallel some of the tzadim that we're seeing here. But also, as Rav Bakshi Daron discusses in his tshuva, that it really goes to the question of what is Hakel about. We try to figure out what is the age that you're supposed to start coming to Hakel. So it depends what the mitzvah is about. It's interesting that mitzvah is only every 7 years anyway, so for a lot of people it's all going to depend where your age happens to fit in the cycle, so you're not necessarily going to have the opportunity to go when you're 2 or 3 years old if it's not going to come up to the right point in the cycle. But in any event, so it relates to the question of what is the mitzvah of Hakel about? Because we know when it comes to chinuch, so chinuch depends on what the mitzvah is about, as far as figuring out what the proper age is. So we find that different mitzvahs have different standards as to what the age is for chinuch. To make a sukkah's reference, so sukkah happens to have its own standard, mitzvah of sukkah, the mitzvah of lulav. So the Mishnayos talk about each one having its own standard for what is the age of chinuch, and in the context of lulav, so the Mishnah says, katan hayodeya l'naneya, he's got to know how to shake the lulav, which is interesting, because that's not considered to be ma'ake of the mitzvah, shaking the lulav, you just have to pick it up to be yotze, but we see that we want the child to be able to relate to the totality of the mitzvah, at least as far as its functioning goes. So here it's an interesting question. So if we believe there's some goal from a chinuch perspective, like here we're dealing with a mitzvah d'oraisa, it's a different concept than the chinuch that the Mishnayos talk about with other mitzvahs. But assuming there's some kind of parallel here, so what is the idea of Hakel that we could use to try to figure out how old of a child is relevant? So it goes through the whole discussion there. Is this about Talmud Torah, or is this about instilling Yiras Shamayim, or is it about the Hakala? Is it about creating the Asifa, creating the gathering? And there's a big tzad that maybe it's about that. And he discusses there, and I think this is something which is also pretty compelling, that the idea of bringing the taf is not necessarily because all of them will benefit at all, but that the experience is different when everybody's there, when the whole population is gathered, so that creates a different atmosphere as far as what this asifa is doing. So therefore, midin the asifa, midin the kihila, so it should involve the younger children. And perhaps that's what's going on here, and that also fits then with the idea of litein schar l'mevi'ehem, that it's not necessarily beneficial for the youngest children, but there's a schar for the parents, meaning not just some kind of random schar that comes from a technical mitzvah that we don't understand, but because there's something that is connected to the theme here, that we're looking to have a large asifa, and having the children there also is a part of that, so there's a schar that correlates to that. So this issue has broader nafkaminas overall for other things as well, and things that happen much more frequently than Hakel, such as the question of shul all the time. So bringing little kids to shul, so that's always a debate as to when that's productive and when it isn't, and of course it also depends on the child and their ability to behave in the shul, but let's assume it's not going to be disruptive, so the question of bringing children who don't necessarily understand so much about what's going on, so that was always a discussion as well, and Tosfos over there in Chagiga and Daf Gimel, where that line is, Litein Schar L'Mevi'ehem, so Tosfos over there says, so Mikan Samchu, this is where they get the idea from, this is what they rely on to bring children to the Beis HaKnesses, to bring little kids, the Beis HaKnesses is based on this. So, as Rav Bakshi Daron points out, you see from that Tosfos that Litein Schar L'Mevi'ehem is not just about the Tzivoy, because in that case there's no Tzivoy. It means that there is an inherent value that is being conveyed there, and that perhaps that notion that applies to Hakel applies to regular shul going as well, and that's where it comes from. More specifically, you find this in Hilchos Megillah, that in the Shulchan Aruch in Tafresh Peites Sevav, the Shulchan Aruch says that you should bring little children to Mikra Megillah. So in Mikra Megillah, you should bring everybody, including the little children. So the Mishnah Berurah there comments that it's got to mean children who are Gil Lechinuch. Then he's got to explain, if that's the case, so then why are we saying, oh, it's a good idea, it should be a Chiyuv? So he suggests that maybe, as far as the Chiyuv, you could read for them at home, but we're trying to train them that it's Kedai to hear the Megillah Barovam and the Sibur. Possibly, but here the Binyanav talks about this in his Tshuva as well, and he suggests that it's a similar kind of concept, that when it comes to Megillah, so there's a notion of Persume Nisa, we want to have a big audience, so as far as creating a big audience, so to have even the little children there is also productive and is also a part of that. Similar to all of this, so there's also a requirement in the pasuk that not only are we bringing the anashim and the nashim and the taf, but also the gerim, also the gericha. So that troubles the commentaries a little bit because they're trying to figure out what does that mean and what's the chiddush. Because if we're talking about gerit tzedek, if we're talking about converts, so they're chayiv in all the mitzvos. So why should that be a chiddush? Why should the Torah have to specify that gerim of that type have an obligation in the mitzvah? And if we're talking about a ger toshav, who is not chayiv in mitzvah, so then really what's his role here? So that is something they need to figure out. So the Yuznayim Torah, for example, suggests that it could be a chiddush with either interpretation, that if we're talking about gerim, so then maybe the idea is, so they missed the experience at Har Sinai, so we're emphasizing that there's a chiyuv to make sure that they're able to replace a Har Sinai experience with this. And if the idea is the Ger Toshav, so we still have certain mitzvah concepts that relate to them, and we want to make sure to instill respect for Kodesh Baruch Hu and his Torah, so then maybe we want to make sure that the Ger Toshav comes for that purpose. The Ibn Ezra understands that the purpose of involving a Ger Toshav in this is maybe he will decide to convert, and therefore he should be exposed to this experience as is connected to that idea. The Rambam in Hilchos Chagiga in Parak Gimel Halacha Hey, when he talks about this, so he phrases it that even the Gerim She'enim Makirim, so even if they don't necessarily understand, they don't understand the Hebrew, they don't know what's going on, but they're still obligated to come and to listen. And it's in that context that he talks about the idea of Kiyom Shenitna Bo B'Sinai, the idea of Maimon Har Sinai, as we referenced before, that the Rambam was highlighting as a major theme. So that's also why even everybody, whether you understand or not, or the other direction, even if you know Kol Torah Kula, he emphasized, there also if you're a big chacham and you know everything already, everyone's got to come because of the Maimon Har Sinai components. So this Maimon Har Sinai idea, again, is something which is emphasized frequently in some of the later writings. And in the Binyanav of Bakshi Daron's Tshuva, so he highlights this specifically as the notion that requires the taf to come. But he also has an interesting point as far as the difference between Har Sinai and Hakel. And it's a little bit of a spin, I don't know if you're saying exactly like this, but a little bit of a spin, that specifically when it comes to Hakel, so the Torah says, Boznehem, it's got to go into their ears, which is different than what we have by Maimon Har Sinai. And I think what he basically suggests is that, so all of us who were born after Maimon Har Sinai, so we have the notion that our neshama was at Har Sinai, but we also need to connect to that through some kind of direct experience of our own, should actually go into our ears. So that supplements the historical Sinai that our souls were present for. So we also have to have the direct home experience, individual experience, and that's what the Hakel is meant to represent. So all of this could be relevant to the question of ceremonies that happen in Bizman Hazeh in order to be a Zecher LaHakel, in order to keep alive the notion of Hakel. There was a post about this on the Sfarim blog last week, talking about various events that have happened in Yerushalayim, have happened in New York, in order to try to preserve the message of Hakel, and that emerges from a lot of these ideas that there's a lot of value to that. So coming from Rav Bakshi Daron's point that we want to try to have our own direct connection to something Sinaitic, to something that evokes the Sinai experience, it probably makes sense as well to try to do whatever we can to supplement that personally and to have some kind of a event of this type. And Lubavitcher Rebbe, in his sichos, he also emphasized this strongly as part of his understanding of the whole Maimed Har Sinai kind of evocation, that it also makes sense that even without the actual trappings of Hakel as described by the Torah, but whatever you can do to keep that memory alive is also kedai. And this is also a point that Rabbi Parnas, the author of the Sefer Parshas HaMelech, that he actually emphasized to me directly, so I'll make sure to mention this, that the idea of Hakel, which the Rambam talks about as Har Sinai, but he also uses the language of Yom HaKol, which is what the Torah uses talking about Har Sinai. A few times you find that phrase in Chumash, of Yom HaKol. And the letter that Rav Huttner wrote, so he emphasizes very much this idea of Yom HaKol. So it comes out that it's not just about the mitzvah of Hakel, it's the whole day has a certain identity to it of evoking Har Sinai. So perhaps all the more so, so whatever we can do in order to connect to that theme is kedai. So we could add that therefore learning about it is certainly very valuable, and we know that we have a theme without that theme that goes throughout halacha, that whenever, especially if we're not fulfilling a mitzvah directly, if we don't have the circumstances to fulfill a mitzvah directly, so then to learn about it is considered to be very valuable, and perhaps even as if we are mekayim it itself. It's an idea that we find by the Karbanos, and we find it by many other things as well. Perhaps the whole discussion where we do find it or we don't find it. But perhaps a mitzvah like this is especially conducive to such a notion that if we're trying to create this ongoing link to Har Sinai in order to instill Yiras Shamayim, in order to remind us of the bris, in order to connect us to the values of Torah, in order to make sure there is a Mesorah that our children appreciate and are inspired by. So to learn about Hakel and to talk about it at this time especially, we have this unique, this unusual, rare opportunity where it's the time the Torah describes. So to talk about Hakel at this time certainly has all of those values wrapped up in it. So it would add also then to write Sfarim about it, so Yashar Koach to Rabbi Parnas and others who have written about this topic, to the Aderes who wrote about it 100 years ago, more, to other 150 years ago, to those who, there's an essay about this in Rav Zevin's Lore Halacha, there's a few places where there was devoted attention to the concept of Hakel, but especially now to write about it and to talk about it and to consider these themes is especially valuable for us. So it should be our zchus that as we transition out of the Shemitah year, where so much of Shemitah we have to approach through an attitude of Zecher L'Shvias, that we have to actively try to do what we can to keep the mentality of Shvias alive, even when we're not able to really practice it. And the Tumim has the whole drasha in his commentary to Choshen Mishpat, where he talks about Prizbul and Shemitah's Ksafim, about how especially when it comes to Shemitah, which is a mitzvah where you really are able to experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkacha directly and the faith of the Jewish people in that Hashkacha, so to keep that memory alive is especially crucial. And therefore, all the more so to make sure, he was arguing, at least after Du Prizbul, to make sure that there should be a connection to the values of Shemitah is especially crucial. So all the more so if we see that Hakel is meant to be a hemshech to a certain extent of the experience and the mentality of Shemitah. So it's very important that we should have a zecher, we should have some awareness, we should have an appreciation for what these concepts involve. So Yashar Koach to everyone who wrote about this and who talks about this and who's trying to relate to this concept over this next week when it's particularly in focus. And it should be a zchus that through that we should be zocher to have the mitzvahs of Shemitah, the mitzvah of Hakel, and all of the mitzvahs ha'tliyos ba'aretz, and the full realization of everything the Torah promises us should all be able to be fulfilled b'miluam b'mehera b'yameinu. So I wish everyone a wonderful Yontif. We usually take a hiatus over Chol HaMoed, so we'll probably regroup in 2 weeks. But everyone should have a wonderful Yontif. It should be a time of bracha, of simcha, and it should take us through to a wonderful year. Amen. Amen.